You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Every time I hear that, I want to do that thing with when you see the king in his karate outfit doing his thing. I don't know. It just hits me that way. So,
you ever seen Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story?
Long time ago.
I cannot think of Elvis sometimes without thinking of Jack White doing Elvis. That's karate. There's only two people know that. Elvis and the Chinese.
Actually, I forgot about Jack Black as karate.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's really funny. Really funny.
7:08 in the morning. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Matt Neely calling in soon. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Steve Christie coming up at the top of the hour. Let's get to this one. Sideshow Bob, get ready for Sideshow Bob real quick. And also, before as he's doing that, remember we have a party coming up 6 days from now, Tuesday, March 2nd, at the fabulous St. Philip's Plaza. The weather will be beautiful. 5 p.m. start, outdoor event, Proof, Reforma, Union. It's Taco Tuesday. It's got a whole bunch of stuff going on. Please RSVP if you can at wakeuptucsoncomments@gmail.com. Just so if we get a bunch of people, we can let Grant staff up properly. If you're someone who's thinking about running for office, new blood. We're looking for new blood from city councils, town councils, Oral Valley, Marana, Sarita, school boards, whatever. Stop by. Introduce yourself and we'll get you hooked up with the right people. So got to start now, children. Got to start now. All right, so this letter to the editor today. Hold on, I want to text Neely. I mean, I feel like I feel like there's a time zone thing going on here. Hold on, Matt Neely. Hold on. You're on right now. Period. I am voice texting while on the air. There we go.
And like magic.
See, that's what happens. I voice text and Matt Neely magically shows up. I want to read this while he's on the air, really. This is part of it. Thank you, Matthew, for your professional early calling into the show.
I'm on delay on the screen.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Bill number two sent this out, and I know you saw this, so because you responded to it, but I want to read this letter. Tom's ready with the Sideshow Bob laugh. This is from Jeff Edwards, a concerned citizen on the West Side. I'll give you the point for it. And it seems every day we get to read a letter from a lucky recipient crowing that they enjoyed getting a COVID-19 vaccine. That's the virtue signaling of it. My view is that the Arizona vaccine distribution appears to be a corrupt debacle. At this point, a significant portion of the population cannot get the vaccine for many months, if ever. This guy's a drama queen. The Pima County supply seems to change unpredictably on a daily basis. No, sorry, that was a snap for me, not... Stop it. You got to stop it. We got to start it. We're not even to the point yet. We're almost there.
Yeah, wait for it, right?
Yeah. All right.
Not yet.
When I got my marker. When my marker goes like that, you're ready to go. Here we go. These supply variations, along with other circumstantial evidence, suggest that much of the state vaccine supply is being misappropriated inequitably to connected people of questionable eligibility. As a public service... The Star should have one of their excellent investigative reporters like Tim Steller look into how... Oh! When we see excellent investigative reporter like Tim Steller, it just makes a lot of us laugh and choke in our... Just choke it up. It's unbelievable.
Did you ever see Conan O'Brien in the 90s where he had Hans Blix, or early 2000s, I guess, where you had Hans Blix looking for a very obvious, weapons of mass destruction or the chemical weapons on the set. It was apparent to everybody in the audience, and the Hans Blix character, you know, just couldn't find the obvious thing in the studio. So
I remember when Hans Blix lost his life in North Korea in the Team America movie. I do remember that.
I did not know that. I did not know
Hans,
that.
What are you doing here?
Well, and I guess what got me about that whole, the one line in the letter was improperly allocating government resources to, quote, connected people of questionable eligibility. I thought that was the way we did things in Pima County. I mean, you know, it's like, I thought that's how you got a business license in Pima County. That's what you've been saying on the show for years.
Jeff, I'm sure you just moved here from Modesto last week, but that's the way things rock and roll in Pima County, baby. We're all about who's connected.
That's the whole system.
Well, you had a good point about, we were talking about Huckleberry can't find money for testing, right?
Oh, good grief. You know, the guy's got money for every shiny object and every, you know, all the magic beans, worldview, and buys up open space, you know, like it has endless resources for open space and a little dealios. And then, you know, if you look in the dictionary, the picture, you know, of a rainy day, I mean, this is it. This is the proverbial rainy day that everybody always
talks about. Global pandemics are absolutely the rainy day.
Right? It's an existential threat to business people. It's an existential threat to renters and banks and people for their jobs and the whole system, right? The whole thing, right? And this is the rainy day, right? And and now he's saying that I'm going to basically hold, I'm just going to threaten all the maybe low income people, and that they keep saying they need to do testing in Pima County, and they need to do it at a low cost or free, right? And to make sure everybody, if they've got it, they can isolate. And he's saying, nope, I'm just going to stop doing it, because basically he's got his ongoing, you know, quest at showing up the state, and that's the entire, you know, way.
So I want to get back to your
superiority complex that the county has with the state. It's gone back, you know, 50 years, I'm sure. You know?
I want to get back to your rainy day thing, right? So they crapped on Doug Ducey, right? Because in the last couple of budgets, he says we're not touching the rainy day fund. Because of these red for ed teachers who basically have shown themselves to be hacks by not showing back in school, right? Most of those teachers that were red for edders running around, not going to their classrooms and being on street corners with their red for eds by the gas station, those are probably most of the people who aren't showing up to teach your kids even today. Okay? And remember, they all gave Doug crap for the rainy day, and look what happened. The big rainy day came.
The rainy day happened, right?
You know.
And so, you know, I just I saw that the press coverage of this last week, and it just really I thought that even for the normal way that things get done in Pima County, and even the normal posturing that the county administrator does against the state, I thought even compared to that, that was even bad compared to even how they normally do it. I just thought it was really awful that they would just they would kind of hold the people hostage to that and use them as a poker chip in this the state's a bunch of bad people and we're going to show up the state again.
His need for an ego boost to crap on the state, right, goes against all of the marketing and money they've wasted out there to say you should get tested, and he's the first one out there. Well, it looked like we're not going to have any money for the testing. Oh, I'm sorry. At the Pima County Bonds, you guys shot us down on those $30 million for soccer fields that none of the kids on the south side can play on and no one's going to use for quite a while before a pandemic. But damn it, look what Uncle Chuck found. I found $30 million for that. Oh, Mr. Levine has this empty building that no one's going to use and I'm still not using. Here's another $3.5 million. Oh, we need to cash out Don Diamond? Let's find some money over there. You know what I mean? And you're right. And so he finds money for everything else.
Right. And he was on Buckmaster's show a month or so ago, and he was talking about like $40 million in testing costs. Chris, $40 million out of $1.5 billion budget, and he can find tens of millions at a drop of a hat for Worldview, which, I mean, come on, what's that led to? The founders of Worldview set up a competing company in another state. That was the gratitude we got from them.
Well, okay, remember, they were a hot market. Everyone wanted to ride on a balloon. I couldn't let them go. There would be the amount of people, off 12 of them, wouldn't have a job in Pima County doing balloons.
They got $7 million for painted rocks. You know, just boom. That was supposed to be out of a bond. Again, the bond didn't pass. Okay, fine. I'll find it. Then he's got to go look for, you know, $30 or $40 million to cover some testing to keep people safe. I mean, just incredible the arrogance and the poor priorities, just the awful priorities. And so that's what struck me as just a slap in the face. But it's the way they do things here, right?
Well, you know, I can get away with almost murder around here because there's not many people in the press who even have the depth or the guts to challenge me on such things. So
it's a little Sergeant Schultz action, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, I'll throw Dylan an extra $23 a month for his wonderful Tucson Sentinel, and he won't get on my ass about nothing. How about that?
We'll just rail against cell phone towers and have many, many articles about a fountain that we want to fill with.
I'll take my $23 from my $400,000 I'm making from the taxpayers, and I'll throw it to Dylan, and he'll go, "Oh, thank you, Mr. Huckleberry. Oh, I'll put you on my list of supporters when I say, oh, thank you, Chuck Huckleberry, for supporting some wonderful, wonderful, wonderful free press stuff going on here. Just wonderful." So,
and maybe we can get another $100,000 for a ill-fated flight to New York. So, hey,
that's true. That's another thing we found, $100,000 just under Uncle Chucky's rock for the old failed American Airlines Mike Vonnie and the Chamber fly off into the sunset deal. Was that the one?
That one he did off the ledger. If you recall, he never took it to the board, and then they just quietly kind of made the payment happen. So, I think at some point, you know, the voters ought to be pretty incensed about this. But as you and I know, that doesn't happen.
All right. We got to go to break. It's a Q on Wednesday here with Chuck Huckleberry and Matt Neely. Listening to my voice and the way I manage might make you feel a little queasy. And that begins with a Q. Wake up, Tucson. Sorry. Wake up, Huckleberry Loop. That's what we're going to change the name of. It's going to be Wake Up Tucson. It's going to be Wake Up Huckleberry Loop, where we got more of those COVID masks using as garbage just sitting on the street. Wake up, Tucson. Wake up, damn it. Wake up, Huckleberry Loop. There we go. That didn't wake you up at 7:25 in the morning. You're still in a coma someplace. Dr. Matt Neely, how are you doing, sir?
Good. Good morning.
So give me the we got a few minutes here in this second segment. We're a little long on the first one. Tell me what's going on. One of Tucson's muses, of course, is the great state of California. You know, let's start with my favorite new city. I spend a lot of time more in the OC than I do San Diego. But tell me about Carlsbad, California. They're my new favorite city in California.
Yeah, so quick little background. In the state of California, you haven't been able to eat in a restaurant for many, many months. I mean, since COVID started. So as you're driving around, you see tents in parking lots at restaurants, and you can sit up in a tent in the shade in the blacktop and eat, and supposedly that's safe, right? But you cannot eat in a restaurant. Well, predictably, and of course we talked about it with the gal up in the valley who was right next to a TV production set that was allowed to serve, and she had invested all this money in her patio and was not allowed to serve because of the upswing, right, in November, December. So they had actually, the state had actually said you can't even do outside eating. It's all takeaway, all takeout. Well, a group of restaurateurs in Carlsbad, they watched several of their fellow business people go out of business, and they said, that's it. They banded together. They hired an attorney, and they said, we're open. We are open. It's a constitutional protest. We're open indoor dining, outdoor dining. We're open. We're going to serve our customers safely. They had a press conference, and KUSI out in San Diego covered it. And so these restaurateurs in Carlsbad, California said that we're tired of waiting for the state to do something about this. We're not just going to sit around and flush our life's work down the toilet and go bankrupt. So this was about a week ago. They're still open. The state, you know, I'm sure sensing that they've got little or no leverage, is hasn't done anything. And again, I liked how the restaurateurs, they didn't say we're just going to serve. They said we're going to serve our customers safely, right? Just like people are doing all across the country, just like people in Florida, which has been open throughout this whole thing, and they had the same sorts of rates of COVID that everybody else has, that California has. So before, where only somebody like a connected bureaucrat or somebody could eat in a restaurant, like the governor of California could.
Remember, with hospital officials who were telling everyone, you got to clock down, you got to ruin your lives, and he's hanging out with fundraisers from the hospital systems at Tom Keller's French Laundry in Napa.
Right. Yep.
That's another Louis the 16th moment.
So their attorney's name is Michael Curran, and maybe I don't know if you ever have thought to reach out to him.
Sure, I'd love to.
But I watched it, and of course they covered it on the news, and I thought, well, that's good for them. I mean, you know, at some point you just have to take control of the situation, and they've been pushed around, and they've seen. I mean, there's no mystery to it. You know, you maybe cut your capacity down a little bit, and certainly restaurateurs have figured out best practices for them. And, oh, by the way, even Pima County says restaurants are not vectors for COVID transmission. Gyms are not vectors for COVID transmission. So, you know, again, I salute these people that just decided to take charge, take control, and, you know, good luck to the state, right? I mean, you guys come after these guys at your own peril, because I think the people have figured it out here.
They have, and this is going to be part of how the two ways we're going to get out of this is, for right now, the vaccinations are important. It's also a very important mentally for people to get the vaccinations, that they can feel they can get out, and then a bunch of us are going to have to just ignore them, literally, in the end.
That's what's going to any Tucsonans that are in the San Diego area, you know, make the trip up to Carlsbad. It's not that far away, and go patronize one of these diners if you would like to eat inside of a restaurant, like, you know, normal people. And you know,
all right, we're running out of time on this segment, buddy. Yeah. All right, we come back, we got more with Matt. Wake up Tucson, 10:30. The Voice, Steve Christie, top of the hour. Susie Quattro. Hey, welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson Show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Let's go back to our good friend Matt Neely. Matt, welcome back, sir.
Hey there.
As we like to say. Yes, sir?
And go ahead. I'm sorry.
I didn't
step on you.
No.
I was just going to say, we were talking about, you know, California and the restaurateurs in Carlsbad in the last segment. And I'm telling you, this recall of Newsom, he'd better watch out, because you know, the kind of the liberal bent in California gets all the press, and they've got all the numbers in the highly populous areas in the Bay Area and in LA, but the middle of the state's very, very conservative. And this one issue of the shutdown, is really, really hit people's sensibilities, in a way that I think it's not just going to be Republicans who are willing to vote for recall. So I just think that the state's flat-footed response on this and heavy-handed response on this, especially in light of the evidence around the country that it's no better than states like Florida that have had a lighter hand, I think the recall effort could be, you know, I think it could be very successful against the Governor Newsom here.
The last couple of breakdowns that I've seen comparing Florida and California is, you know, it kind of came out. Now, don't get me wrong, if they were both kind of equal in how things went down, right, you're still better off being Florida, right, because you didn't lock down, right?
Right.
But we're starting to see that some of the numbers are coming up better in Florida. in different metrics than California. Not by like huge, but a decently better than the misery that caused, and especially in New York, of course, right? Is this is for all the lockdown kings and queens out there? Florida is your enemy. They proved it. They have one of the oldest percentage populations in the country in Florida.
Right.
The ones that were they had the bigger a huge percentage of their population that was the one most susceptible to this coronavirus thing. And
they have,
you know,
retired New Yorkers. Yeah, right.
I mean, even to this day, talking to a couple of people in Phoenix, you know, Ducey's still catching hell from people who want him to shut the state down right now. Right now. Close it down. You got to close it down. And all these medical professionals and, you know, some person at the paper always finds, quote, experts at the U of A. Close it down. Close it down. Well, you know something? You don't have to do that. There's ways of doing this properly. You know?
Absolutely.
And Florida, I mean, I hope Newsom and Cuomo get run out on a rail, both of them. I can ask for two better guys to get run out of a rail than those two idiots. So where do you want to go next?
Well, and just real quick, last time I was on with you, we talked about the city of Long Beach. They, you know, the brainiacs on the city council thought that they could do a compensation policy better than businesses. And they gave all the grocery store workers a $4 an hour raise. And that caused two grocery stores in the city of Long Beach to close. So for 200 people, instead of getting a $400 raise, they got a $4 an hour raise. They got a 100% pay cut. Not to be outdone, County of Los Angeles yesterday passed a $5 an hour wage increase for grocery workers. And
so, who pays for that?
All of us, and some of them are going to pay with their jobs. Because again, the same thing's going to happen. Grocery chains are going to look at their underperforming stores, and they will figure it out. They will right size their business to be able to function in the you know, with the added payroll costs. So again, a government entity, they said, oh, for 120 days, we got to have, quote, hero pay, unquote, for grocery workers. And, hey, I'm thankful for all the grocery workers that have stuck it out. I'm not disparaging them at all. Has it been a vector for COVID? I don't know. I mean, I certainly haven't heard of it being a vector for COVID.
It's not. I mean, there's something that's so crazy that somehow the supermarkets, okay, for all their contact tracing. So what have we learned from contact tracing, Matthew? Where is anyone really getting the coronavirus?
Multi-generational homes.
Yep. It's in the house. That's what's happening.
Family gatherings, right? That's it.
Please. You know, from what I see is, isn't it has to be, even if you don't get it from someone that you're related to, right? It's usually face-to-face contact for an decently extended amount of time. That's what it feels like to me. Is the closest thing I've seen to where really prevalent that you get this thing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's even with the stupid masks on. Remember, we were wearing masks throughout this whole bump that went on through the holidays. So that's bullcrap too. There's people talking to each other in masks, literally 5 feet from each other, just, you know, doing the human thing, connecting, right? And they're giving each other the corona. That's how this... no one else has told me anything else. Am I missing something, Matt? It's not airplanes. They're shoving us in like sardines in the airplanes in a recycled air system, right? They shoved me in that tube at the airport in Denver where, you know, the mayor of Denver came on and said, hey, we're all sitting an inch from each other. He said, well, thanks for help fight the coronavirus. Please stay 6 feet apart. And we're all laughing because we're stuck in an actual box. Right? So So what do you say? Am I missing it? Is there some place? Because we know it's not supermarkets. You know? It's hospitals.
So again, you know, and God forbid, they've cleaned airplanes on a regular basis for the first time since, I don't know, forever, since they didn't have open cockpits, you know. So God, thank God, you know, they actually go through and clean planes every once in a while now. Staggering what government entities do, and they're pandering to votes. They know they got grocery workers unions, and You know, but, you know, if they're getting hero pay, well, what about police and paramedics that are stepping into situations? Why it's puzzling why it's just grocery workers. And again, I'm not knocking them. I'm glad they were there, and I'm sure, you know, they were scared. I'm sure anybody that was in a public-facing job throughout this, you know, had some apprehension about going to work. But very quickly, they did everything they could to make people as safe as possible. And shoot, at least if you're at work, you know, your employer knows what you're doing at work. It's when you're at home and, you know, getting together outside of work, having get-togethers outside of work, that's where they don't know what's going on, and that's where a lot of the transmission happens.
Are you saying that SEIU has more sway with Democrat councils than the police and fire unions? Is that what you're telling me?
Don't fall out of your... Hold on to your arm.
Uh-oh, I almost got up and did it.
Fall out of your chair.
Almost did it.
Don't get the falling sickness.
Doesn't it feel semi... if someone took that to court, right? The whole idea of we're going to only do minimum wage but a bump, but it's only for someone else. You're going to force a company to pay for a specific portion of... I mean, that feels like it goes to court, it loses in 3 seconds.
I would think so. I don't know why the Long Beach one wasn't challenged, actually.
Just like the county's stupid curfew here in Tucson and Pima.
Yeah, that one folded pretty quick, didn't it? I mean, that one didn't work.
You know what's so awesome about that? When this is all over and done with, right? Right? And hopefully it gets done in the next 2 or 3 months in relation to vaccinations and this thing just kind of quieting down, right? Huckleberry and Rahina are still going to be fighting the curfew in court. That's the best part.
Yeah. Well, and then just another aspect of lockdowns and everything, you know, in the state of Arizona, we've been talking about reopening schools. Well, over the weekend, I was watching some coverage out of L.A., and they had a drive-through protest in L.A. about not opening schools. And, of course, the announcer was dutifully reading her copy while the video roll was going. And she said, I couldn't even believe a Los Angeles news anchor would read this line. But she said that the critics of reopening schools say that the only people who want to open public schools in California are rich white people. And I said, man, that is just completely incendiary. I can't believe an anchor read that in a major market like Los Angeles. But as she was saying, the only people that want to open rich white schools are the only people who want to open schools are rich white people. There was footage of people driving by the camera, and one person was driving a brand new BMW with a big sign that says, you know, end educational racism now. So now it's educational racism. Okay, that's what, but I thought, you know, wow, nice new BMW. That's, poverty and racism and oppression kind of has a different sort of meaning in Los Angeles, apparently, because certainly did not look to be anybody who was clearly oppressed in any way, shape, or form that I could see. But that's the meme they're trying to push, right? That it's racist. And they're calling it educational racism to open the school. So expect to see that on signs coming through in Arizona now. I mean, I know they had their, you know, write your own obituary and read it to, or, you know, send it to the governor as teachers, because, you know, you're going to die when schools open up. That's the tactics. That's the level of, you know, that's the level of dialogue we're stuck with. It's just all about death and racism and oppression.
So what are we learning as we watch the last 11 months unfold, Matthew, right? Who are the people who have stepped up, and who are the people who have exposed themselves, right? And the people that have exposed themselves not only have been some of these, quote, leaders, right, but it's been the teachers, a lot of these teachers, the teachers' unions, right, have shown themselves just they've lost their mind, you know, and they're not the heroes that they said. Right. The heroes that they said that they were in the Red for Ed movement, as we like to say, you keep saying the word, but you don't know what it means.
Right. And again, kids are getting further and further behind. You get a 7, 8-year-old on a Zoom class, please. It's not working. They're getting further and further behind. They're doing a huge disservice. Oh, and by the way, the CDC, which is now Biden's CDC, says it's safe to have school. So all the people who say, hey, science and data, you know, they've guess what? They're not so interested in that.
So I want to clarify, the teachers that wanted to go back to the classroom last fall, the teachers that have been in classrooms since last fall, including my Lehman teachers, the Sal Point teachers, all of these private schools that and charter schools that have been, you guys are still doing a great job. It's these other ones and the union. And the other thing, too, I think the misperception of TUSD is that the teachers union represents all the teachers. They do not. They only represent a portion of them. Lawrence will call up and tell you how much the teachers union at Tucson Unified School District, he wouldn't join if he put a rifle to his head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what do they do at TUSD, right? Is they basically helped Adelita Grijalva and crew, right, create one of the worst learning environments in the United States. And as long as Adelita throws them a little bit of a bone once in a while for a pay raise, and they get to flex their muscles during elections, who cares about the educational experience for teachers, parents, or students?
Correct.
And that's where we're at. 7:48 in the morning, 7:49 in the morning. One more segment with my friend Matt Neely. When we come back after that, we have Supervisor Steve Christie should be here. So wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice. What an interesting combo this is. This is from John, right?
Yes.
Michael Quattro doing Court of the Crimson King with a little guy named Uncle Ted on the guitar. I don't even know. I've interviewed Ted 3 times on this show. I got to bring this up now. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, KVOI, The Voice. Just when you thought you didn't get enough Stacy Q in your day. She was a one-hit wonder in the 80s with this one. So it's a Q day. We're hanging out with M-Day, Matt Neely. Matt, welcome back, sir.
Hey there. Stacy Q, oh my goodness. That's a bad memory. Well, not bad memory, just weird 80s stuff.
Bruce Ash sent me this story yesterday about Dr. Fauci. You're right. It says vaccinated people can't dine indoors because of the safety of society. And I put it, he's Dr. Fauci. He's a misery super spreader.
and conflicting information super spreader and confusion super spreader, I guess.
So I saw Ann Holden put up on her Facebook page, if I'm vaccinated, why do I have to wear my mask? Right? It's like, remember that originally when they said, if masks work, why are we pulling everyone out of jail? Right? Because if they work, they should be because they can't socially distance in jail. Well, if they have masks, right? That's what you're telling everyone, right? That, like, think about it. You're sitting on that plane we're talking about, 3 feet from everyone, or on the little tram at Denver International Airport, right? They're saying, oh, you're good because you have masks. But we let all these criminals out of the prison because the masks don't work?
Somehow.
Chris is very confused, as usual. All right, what do you want to get off your stack of stuff, your Deb Fern stack of stuff? We only got about 4 minutes here.
So I'm going to be on Charles Heller's America's Fabric this weekend. I wanted to plug that. It's on KVOI Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. It's a 30-minute show, and we're going to do we're going to talk about the history of the bolo tie in Arizona.
The bolo tie?
The bolo tie.
Bolo tie, sorry.
Yes,
bolo,
sure.
Something else.
it's coming up in April. It's the 50th anniversary of it being adopted as the official state neckwear of Arizona. And Charles reached out to me and asked if there's anything related to history that I might want to contribute to a show. And I thought that would be... Immediately, talking about the bolo tie, I thought it was a good piece of Arizona history. And that'll be on. So if any Wakeys want to know more than you ever wanted to know about the bolo tie.
Give me the origin of the bolo tie. Why did we take this cord of leather and just wrap it around our neck and put this metal thing to hold it together?
Well, the way the story goes, that started in late 1940s, around 49. A guy named Vic Cedarstaff, he was a silversmith up in Wickenburg, northwest of Phoenix, and he lost his hat in a gust of wind. He was out riding horses, with some buddies, and he had this leather hat band that he didn't want to lose, so he retrieved his hat and put the leather hat band around his neck just for safekeeping. And that gave him the inspiration for an idea that led to something that turned out to be a fashion device, right? People started wearing them. He started making them, and he thought, hey, this might sell, and it sure did. And so in the 50s and 60s, it really caught on in the state of Arizona. And there's a group of people, six guys founded the Bola Tie Society of Arizona back in 1966. My dad was one of those six people.
Oh, my God, I did not know that.
Yeah. Weird, wild, wacky stuff. It took them 5 years to get the state legislature and the governor to pass it as an official state symbol. And that happened in April of 1971. And the reasons they did it was to promote a state identity, jobs for Native American craftsmen and silversmiths. And it was popular with rock hounds. It was popular. I mean, it doesn't even have to be jewelry. People make the stereotypical resin encased scorpion, or I mean, they can make them out of anything. And so stuff that you have hobbies about, if you stuff that you collect, electronics, electronic components, turquoise, that's kind of the stereotypical silver with turquoise, piece of turquoise. That's the kind of stereotypical bola tie. And we talk in the program about the bolo versus bola, and opine on why I believe bola is still the correct term. The guy that invented it called it a bola tie, and it was named after a Argentinian roping device called a boleadora. So it's kind of a neat story, and we kind of talk about where you can find him in Tucson and where you can see him. And
so where can I find him in Tucson, real quick, before we run out of time?
Well, Max Indian Jewelry. There's a guy named Mark Body up at St. Phillips Plaza. Mark Body Indian Arts. You can see him there. So those are two places where you can see him. Also, estate sales. I know we got a few listeners that are really into that.
Betsy.
Estate sales, eBays. That's a big deal. So that's a great place to find them. And they're still very popular. If you look at the pricing of them,
when I asked you about the origin of it, I was thinking of Dana Carvey as the grumpy old man. In the old days, we didn't have fabric for ties. We just found some leather shoestrings. We wrapped them around our necks, and we loved it.
And we loved it. Yeah.
What time's that America's Fabric on Sunday, sir?
8 a.m. Sunday on KVOI, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
Look at you. Well played.
Yeah.
All right. Uh-huh. Have a good week, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
You too.
It's a great Matt Neely. Steve Christie coming up next. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice.